I'm John Satcher, the Associate Chair of the History Department at the University of Central Florida, and you're listening to Rich's Documentary Podcast. Welcome to the Rich's Documentary Podcast. Rich's, the regional initiative for collecting the history, experiences, and stories of Central Florida, is an umbrella program housing interdisciplinary public history projects that bring together different departments at the University of Central Florida with profit and nonprofit sectors of the community in order to promote the collection and preservation of the region's history. By facilitating research that records and presents the stories of communities, businesses, and institutions in Central Florida, Rich's seeks to provide the region with a deeper sense of its heritage. This series will feature a podcast every 2 weeks, in the middle and at the end of each month, that will explore various aspects of Central Florida history. In today's episode, The Mouth, Central Florida's tourism icon, Lindsay Turnbull looks at Gatorland's iconic mouth, which was built to attract visitors to the park. Dr. Jim Clark and Dorothy Mays discuss the effects of the mouth on tourism, the role that roadside attractions have played in Central Florida history, and how alligators became symbolic of Florida culture.
Proprietor Owen Godwin founded Gatorland in 1949. The park was one of the first roadside attractions in the area. By definition, a roadside attraction was built to be commercial, charged admission, was privately owned and operated, usually by one family, highway adjacent. It used colorful promotional material and, most importantly, showcased Florida's natural flora and fauna. In 1956, Owen Godwin's son, Frank, built a massive set of alligator jaws to serve as the park's entrance. The iconic jaws have proved a lasting part of Gatorland's image, even surviving a fire in 2006. Currently, the 110-acre park boasts a nature trail, wildlife education programs, unique animals, and alligator wrestling shows. Gatorland is not only known as the alligator capital of the world, it was also voted Central Florida's best half-day tourist attraction. While the mouth is no longer the entrance to the park, Central Florida residents recognize the Gatorland icon. But where did it come from? Today we will hear from Dr. Jim Clark, Professor of Florida History, and Associate Professor Dorothy Mays, author of Gatorland, Survival of the Fittest Among Florida's Mid-Tier Tourist Attractions, which was featured in the Florida Historical Quarterly. But first, a little alligator history. How did alligators become synonymous with Florida?
Largely by accident. It begins in the late 1800s when Henry Flagler began bringing his wealthy tourist friends to Florida. And they were fascinated by the alligators. And some people in St. Augustine saw some alligators one day, and they didn't want them, and they threw them into an old shack. And some people came by later and asked what the noise was in the shack, and they told them. And the people said, well, could we pay you a quarter to look at your alligators? And the guy said, sure. And they looked in the window of this shack and paid. And after that, Alligator Farm was born. They are also such unique animals that you don't see them in most parts of the United States.
Dr. Clark tells us how the alligator became a marketing tool for Florida tourism.
In the days before Disney and Universal, it was alligators and other animals. There's Parrot Jungle down in South Florida. The animals were the big draw. First of all, alligators were everywhere. And all you needed were to get a handful of alligators together, and you had an alligator attraction. So it was a very cheap way to get into the entertainment business, and you could get people to stop. Although we think of Gatorland in Orlando and Alligator Farm in St. Augustine, there were literally hundreds of these places alongside the road where they would have a couple of alligators, and you would stop off and buy some oranges or get some juice and see a couple alligators, and maybe even buy baby alligators. Thousands of baby alligators were sold and taken back up north and gave birth to those great stories about alligators in the sewers of New York.
How did you come to be interested in Gatorland?
I am a librarian, but I also do a whole lot of research in history. I got interested in Gatorland because maybe 6 or 7 years ago, I went to Gatorland just as a tourist, and I picked up this little book in the gift shop. It was about 20 pages long, and it was called Snakes in Florida, written by Owen Godwin, who is the guy who founded Gatorland. And it was a hoot. It had a lot of character in it. You could tell the personality of the author. And I thought, this guy's kind of a funny, crusty old guy. And I just thought, later on when I was looking for a research project, I thought, I wonder if he's still alive. So that's how I got interested in it.
What was Gatorland's appeal before the mouth?
Well, it formed in the 1949 was when they were founded. And it was a typical roadside attraction. It had a big, catchy appearance. It was right off the beaten track. It was advertising Florida nature. That was what most roadside attractions did. They had to be close to the public. And it was something that people did on an impulse. It was too small and rinky-dink. I don't mean that word rinky-dink in a negative connotation, but most roadside attractions were small, modest operations, which is what Gatorland was for the first 5, 8, 10 years. So it was really designed to snag tourists who are on their way to the beach. This was before the interstate highway system, so people were driving on Orange Blossom Trail on their way to the beach. And that was what they relied on, those impulse stops.
The mouth was not an original part of Gatorland. It was built out of the need to attract more visitors.
Most roadside attractions, they needed to snag the attention of people who were just driving by. So they were looking for a big thing that was going to be hard to miss. They knew that people were not familiar with the territory, but they needed something big and obnoxious enough to catch people's attention. All over Florida, roadside attractions did this. They had 40-foot concrete statues of a snake or of a pirate. Frank Godwin, who was the son of the founder, wanted to do something with an alligator. He took an alligator skull home one night with him, and he was looking at it from all different angles, and then he just got the idea, well, what the heck, let's do a big, gaping alligator jaws and have that be the entrance of the park, where people walk through those jaws. He consulted with some welders to make a rebar frame, cover it with concrete, paint it, and that's how it came into existence.
How did the mouth become a tourism icon that represented Gatorland?
I think that there are some iconic images in Florida. A palm tree, a pink flamingo, the beach, and alligators. So I think that it fit neatly into that pantheon of iconic Florida images. It's a great subject for a picture in a way that not necessarily all of these roadside attractions didn't do such a good job with their eye-catching thing. Something about the mouth, the way it was, the size of it, the shape of it, and the fact that it was designed for people to walk right up to it and through it. That was different than some of the other roadside attractions, the big coiled up cobra that you couldn't go up to it. It was not made to be approached. There's a big towering statue right outside of Wikiwachi that has the mermaids, you know, dancing up in the air. But that's 100 feet in the air. You can't stand beside it. The mouth at Gatorland was different, and it made for a good picture. So I think that was what really helped solidify Gatorland as a tourist stop. I think when people were journalists or authors were doing books or publications on Florida, that was an easy thing to pop onto the jacket of a book or the insert of a tourist brochure.
Did the mouth do what Frank Godwin hoped?
Well, I think it was very effective in getting attention. But it also was so kitschy and eye-grabbing that people wanted to take their picture in front of it. It was very effective at that. It was perfect for people standing beside it, leaning against the teeth. Everybody wanted a picture. So when they went home to Michigan or wherever, they had those pictures. And it was very Florida. It screamed Florida. So I really do think that the mouth, because it was so distinctive and so engaging, it got a lot of national coverage.
What is the lasting effect of the mouth?
I think that it did a good job of putting Gatorland in people's memory banks so that when the roadside attractions started to fold in the 1970s and 80s, most roadside attractions went out of business. And that was because of the highway system. It got people off the back roads and onto freeways. People didn't see the mouth anymore. The only way Gatorland knew how to tell people, all these tourists who were on their way to the beach or on their way to Disneyland, was to blanket Central Florida with billboards and tell them when to get off the freeway. So the mouth really lost its ability to snag attention from passing tourists once I-4 and the Turnpike were built. But it was still engaging enough to make it into the tourist brochures. So it did help, but after the freeways and after Disney World, Gatorland had to really up their game in terms of advertising. They had to be much more aggressive. They had to spend a lot more money because the Gator Mouth didn't cost them anything once it was built. The billboards cost a boatload. So it helped make for an engaging brochure. And it helped get some free advertising and publications. But after the freeways, it lost its ability to get that impulse stop.
The mouth was built in a specific time for a specific purpose. Does the mouth still accurately represent Gatorland?
A lot of people who live in Central Florida have never been to Gatorland. Maybe because they associate it with that big, kitschy mouth. I don't know. It is kitschy. It's kind of hokey and fun. The main part of the park. But you can do that in an hour if you want. But what I think people don't know about Gatorland is how fabulously gorgeous it is. There are a ton of boardwalks that walk over swamps and wetlands. It is a paradise for nature photographers or people who just like to see a little bit of wild Florida. It's beautiful. You can spend a few hours just being dazzled by the natural history of Florida, and I don't think most people know that about Gatorland.
Dr. Clark, do alligator-themed amusement parks stand a chance with the rise of Disney?
I think it's amazing to me that even with Disney, animal attractions in Florida have continued to not only exist, but to do well. They have been able to find a price point so that people who spend all their money at Disney World or all their money at Universal may be looking for something to do their last day and don't want to spend a lot of money. And something like a back-to-nature alligator farm fits the bill and is perfect.
So there you have it. Born out of a need to attract visitors to Gatorland, Frank Godwin constructed a giant alligator mouth to serve as the entrance to the park. While the mouth was successful in bringing guests and publicity, it lost its appeal after the rise of the highway system. The mouth still makes a great subject for a picture and lives on in Central Florida's collective imagination. I would like to thank Dorothy Mays of Rollins College and Dr. Clark of the University of Central Florida for their time. Gatorland is located on 14501 South Orange Blossom Trail in Orlando, Florida. The sounds heard in this podcast, entitled Frog and Cricket Excerpts, were provided by freesound.org user GraySound.
Thank you for listening to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Feel free to contact us with any questions or comments on the program that you just heard. Please join us for the next episode, Harry T. Moore, an interview with Dr. Jim Clark. Thank you.